Hi, Mikey Campling here with episode 19 of the Writing Talk podcast. And we're looking on whether you should go on an online writing course.
Welcome to the Writing Talk podcast, a show that helps you to build your skills as we go on our writing journey together.
Hello and welcome to episode 19. We're trying something a little bit different here because of the sheer amount of time that the podcast has been taking. I am actually broadcasting this live, and if I don't suppose anybody was listening live yet, I've yet really to fix the correct time and date that obviously is going to be going on, but we're giving it a go because Spreaker, which is what I use to host my podcast, allows you to broadcast things live for up to a certain amount of time. So it's quite interesting because we can have people like chatting with an online chat thing as well. But we'll see how we go. So we'll take it fairly easy. It's really because it's a question of I've either had to find a way to make this broadcast a bit more efficient for my time or give it up altogether. And I'd really like to keep it going. So hopefully this will work out. It will be going up in all the usual feeds and everything. So if you are subscribing, sorry it's late this week, but you know this is all coming down to the pressure of time that I was talking about because I need to refocus on my writing. But we'll see how it goes. And it's quite fun, this Spreaker app that they give you, Spreaker Studio it's called, and it does allow you to do all sorts of funny little things. So you can even have people doing things like this, and you know. I better not go too silly with it anyway. So on with the topic in a second after I just sort of run through a bit of my news as usual. I'll try and keep it quick. It's been kind of promotion mode with me this week, really. Lots of things going on because a lot of my books are being re-released. I've put them down to 99 cents or 99p in the UK. You know, it seemed like a good time to do that. And some of them have gone wide where before they used to be just on KDB Select, you know, for the Kindle Unlimited people. And now most things are wide except Cheat Code, which had an existing Kindle Unlimited sort of, or I should say KDP Select term to run through. So that's sort of been interesting. Had a few promotions that I've paid for. A lot of them seem quite disappointing when I do them. I don't know if that's... I think if you do a free download and promote it, then you've got a bit more chance of something really taking off. When you're charging even 99 cents, is that certain resistance to, you know, certain getting your wallet out resistance that you've got to overcome? But, you know, it's interesting and you never know. Results depend on genre and on the timing and on the cover and all kinds of other little factors, the book description. So I won't go too much into that here. Maybe I'll write it up as a blog post or something later. That's mainly what's been taking up my time. And there's this thing, I don't know if you've come across this, I call it promotion paralysis. It's where we've got some promos going and you just can't help. You've got to keep looking and say, is this happening? How many downloads are there? You know, has it affected my ranking? Is it going up and down? You're looking in different countries. And you do end up sort of... struggling to get on with anything. So hopefully I've managed to get a bit of editing done as well. So the third Darkening Stone novel is on its way. It's getting there through its second pass. And just in passing, as I'm going through my news, it's really interesting that my second pass editing is taking me a lot longer because I kind of rushed the first one. So that's a little message, really. If you're going to do your first pass, if you rush through that, you're going to end up paying for it later. It's worth, I think... leaving a gap between finishing your manuscript and editing it. I know everybody says it, but I think it really does bear fruit. Just leave a bit of a gap, come back to it, you know, after a good few days or so at least, and take your time with it, and it'll be probably quicker in the long run. Okay, we'll go on to the main topic this week, which is looking at online courses, because I think this is interesting to talk about because there are so many of them about, and it seems since the self-publishing revolution came about that really a whole economy has sprung up out of nowhere. You know, that the people doing editing, cover designs, proofreading, social media advice and consultancy, marketing advice, all kinds of things. And one of those things that's taking a big part of the economic pie at the moment, and people are making quite a bit of money on, I think, is providing online courses. And I sometimes wonder where all these people came from, you know, all these people in this suddenly new economy that we've got of people doing all these things. Where have they all come from? What were they doing before? You know, are they just people who put up a website and said, "Hey, I can do that," you know, or are they sort of seasoned professionals? There's a mixture out there, so I think you've really got to look carefully and see what people say they've been doing, and see, you know, look at their testimonials and so on. Really worth bearing in mind. Of course, anybody could put up a website and, you know, say, "Oh, I'm an editor," or whatever, and they really might not be the person you need. But anyway, I'm going to focus today just looking on online courses. And again, it's the same kind of buyer beware thing here, because anyone can set up one of these courses. I mean, I'm a qualified teacher myself, and I can really honestly tell you that even if you have particular expertise in something, and even if you've had success in something, it doesn't mean at all that you are a good teacher of it. And really, that's what you're paying for. You're paying to have somebody instruct you and provide support to you. And I do think that's worth bearing in mind. It doesn't mean that their methods that have worked for them are going to work for you, because there are so many factors to think about. Some of these courses are very, very expensive, and it's very tempting when you think, "Oh, that person's had so much success with their books." Well, that's worked for them, and that's great. But, you know, there's the genre to think about. There's the timing. Time, very important in the whole publishing business. How long have these people been around? Because some people made their name early in the days of self-publishing, and what worked for them back in those days won't be able to replicate it now. That's just not going to happen. So that's really something to think about. Judge very, very carefully. And some of them, I mean, I'm not going to say anything here, but I mean, you may have come across some people who really, they are really a dubious benefit. Let's say that, you know, maybe think their courses will be a good fit for you. But there seems a few people out there who are promising the absolute world to aspiring writers. And it's very tempting to think, "Oh, yeah, I'll instantly be successful if I spend all this money." And it must be good because it's so expensive. You know, it's these $600 courses and things. But really think carefully. I mean, I've almost been there. I've been looking at these. They're called long form sales copy pages. Have you come across these where you sort of have to go down and down and down, and you see the course person, the provider, smiling away, and the sample videos, and they're even say, "Oh, tell me what you want in the course," in this Facebook comment. And I'm kind of thinking, hang on, haven't you already made the course? Surely you've already made the course. It's no good asking me now what you want in it. You know, that's just a marketing trick. They probably made the course a month earlier. So that's kind of, you know, you do wonder about some of these things. They have professionally shot videos. They have professionally made websites. They maybe even had somebody in to write their sales copy for them. And they've got these various testimonials and so on. And even that, you do have to be very careful, because it's a bit like the Wild West out there at the moment, I think, with these online courses, especially for writers, which is what I have experience of looking at. There's nobody really regulating this. They're not members of professional associations. So, I mean, I recently heard from a reputable source that some of these course providers are handing out affiliate payments to people who refer, you know, new customers to them of up to 50%, which if you're looking at a $600 course, you know, somebody's getting $300 a time. Now, it doesn't mean that that's everybody who recommends a course is just doing it to cash in. Of course it doesn't. Some people have got high standards of integrity and ethics, and they're upfront about it, and they say, "Yep, you know, I'm getting a kickback for this course, but I have used it, and I've, you know, I approve of it," and so on. That's all fine, as long as they're being transparent about it. But not everybody is, and perhaps you've come across this. But if, like me, you follow a few people online, a few different sort of authority figures in the self-publishing world, then you soon find out when person XYZ has a course coming out, because suddenly you get an email from like five of these people at once, and they all say, "Oh yeah, by the way, this course is coming up." And you think, well, that's strange, they're not mentioning anything about any affiliate payments in those emails. And so it kind of, that makes me very uneasy. And sometimes it's been enough for me to unsubscribe from somebody's newsletter, because I just think, you know, I don't really want to be a just a customer to you. It's a balance. You know, if people are honestly saying, "I've used this course, I recommend it, I'm getting an affiliate payout, it's all above board," that's fine. But otherwise, just be a bit careful, I think, because it's easy to be influenced by people you might look up to. So just worth thinking about, I think. Also, just watch out for the old free webinar thing. I mean, that's a bit of a one to just be a bit wary of. And the free video, you know, the little mini video course or video series and things, they're okay. I mean, I've watched some of these, but if there's three of them, whatever, you know, three little videos or something, then probably the first two are worth watching. And the last one is all about how wonderful their course is. And the same with one of these webinars. I mean, don't bother attending live. Just if you can sign up for them and they'll send you a recording usually. And it's all at what they call, marketing people call, a lead generation exercise. There's often a fairly small amount of content in there. And then, you know, halfway through it becomes about how wonderful their course is. And because you've been listening to them already and you're already kind of agreeing with them and you kind of feel like they've already provided you with something, then you have this sense that you might want to sign up. And it is kind of a sales spiel, really, I'm afraid. It's kind of a marketing trick. You know, as to some of these people, they're not really thinking you of a writer as a writer, whatever they say. They're thinking of you as a lead and a potential conversion. So just watch out, I think. It's fine if you go into these things with your eyes open, but it is becoming a little bit tiresome, I think, the number of people are trying to sort of force a course down your throat. I mean, to be honest, you might feel you get something out of a course, but I would hate you to waste your money. I mean, if you're looking for an easy button, if you're thinking, oh, I'll just go and learn this from person XYZ, and then suddenly I'll be this great writer and be a bestseller, then, you know, I think you can probably know straight away that you're kind of fooling yourself, really. I mean, this is a hard message to tell people, but it isn't a particularly easy business. I mean, any of the creative industries are tough to actually make any money at. But, you know, you'll get there in the end. But if you really stick at it, and if you maintain your sort of sense of ethics and integrity, you're more likely to be successful than somebody who's, you know, trying to sort of look for the easy route and the quick route, I think, by and large. And it's, I think writers are quite vulnerable to this because it's quite a lonely sort of business, and self-publishing even more so. There's all these different things you've got to decide, you know, how you're going to balance the books in terms of, you know, paying for promotion or whatever. And it is very tempting to try and look for a shortcut and also to look for some sort of sense of validation from your peers, and particularly perhaps from an authority figure as well. But I mean, believe me, any validation that you get from paying your $597 then isn't worth having. So if that's what you're looking for, you know, you can't buy credibility and you can't buy success. But having said that, there are lots and lots of places online where writers congregate. Now, I would really encourage you to seek some of these out. Find one that fits. Lots of things are free to join and sign up for, so it's worth having a look around. Some online communities, they focus on a particular aspect of writing and publishing. For instance, maybe marketing. Some genre specific. Some are very wide open. There isn't really a one-size-fits-all thing here that I'd recommend and say, oh, go join this. I really think you've got to look around and shop around a bit. Sometimes you get a sense of community that springs up around a popular blog. Somebody like Chuck Wendig's site I've mentioned before on the podcast, his Terrible Minds blog is quite interesting. You know, he has these weekly flash fiction competitions. There's quite a lot there of interest to writers, and you know, people will help each other out. People will comment on each other's contributions on the Flash Fiction Friday things that he does. There's quite a sense of community around something like the self-publishing podcast. You may have heard of that. It's worth looking into. Several podcasts. I think it's sterlingandstone.net, I believe. But anything I mention will be linked in the show notes. There's quite a few popular Facebook groups, and they're probably quite easy to search through, and you know, maybe ask some of your writing friends if they're in a particularly good Facebook group. And just thinking about it now, I think, well, maybe I should set one up for the Writing Talk podcast, maybe like a little supportive community. I'll look into that, because that might be something you might enjoy, just kind of supporting each other, you know, helping each other out. There's quite a nice one I've come across. It's called Writer 2.0, run by a nice guy called AC Fuller. He has a Facebook group and a podcast as well. If you look for acfuller.com. You'll find it there. But, you know, just keeping up to date with other people. You can connect on Twitter and Goodreads and all sorts. There are some author groups on Goodreads that you might enjoy. I had a look at, there's a guy called, if I get this right, Nathan Van Koops. He's a time travel writer. So you can see that's a very specific one. Thinking about skills areas, like there's the, this is quite a long name, Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast, I believe. That's Lindsay Barocca, is one of the hosts on there. That's, you know, worth a look. But any of these things, if you're a regular, you know, you get a sense of community that grows up around them, and you might get quite a lot out of that by helping other people out and by asking questions and so on. I'd say as a rule of thumb, you kind of look for anywhere where people seem engaged and they're sharing legitimately valuable content, you know, like a podcast with good content in it. Any sort of groups that kind of are all about sharing promotions, you know, please share my book, please tweet my thing. That's really not much help because like, everybody's doing it and there's no, you know, there isn't value to that. I think if you say to somebody, you know, oh, I've written a really good podcast that might, I'm sorry, I've written a good blog post that might be of interest to writers, then, you know, I think that's fair enough. But just, oh, share my book, you know, it's a, please spam people on my behalf, you know, it's, that's not really going to work, I'm afraid. So just bear in mind that the nature of the engagement is important. What else is there? Well, there's also like online writers groups, workshops, critique groups. That some of them have got quite a strict structure where you contribute is the word I was looking for so much each time. You can tell I'm doing this live. You know, you sort of expect it to take your turn, you know, by sort of critiquing other people and in turn having your work critiqued and so on. I mean, if you're lucky enough to sort of live somewhere with a population around, there might be a writer's group in your actual locality that worth sort of get out the house and meet some like-minded people. It's kind of remote where I live, so it's not something that I've found, but I'm sure that would be great. If you're living in a large town or city, I should imagine that's not too hard to find. But really, when everything's said and done, the one thing that will make you a better writer is putting the work in. You know, produce more stories, produce more work, keep at it, keep improving it, keep polishing it. Try and enjoy it as you go. It will improve your work as the more that you do it. It's nice to see. And you can look back and think, gosh, you know, I'm so much better now than I used to be. The other thing is to read lots and read great stuff. Read widely and read books that have stood the test of time, you know, books that have been sort of around for 50, 100 years, really good classics. Doesn't have to necessarily be a literary classic. It could be, say, a sci-fi classic or a horror classic or, you know, something that pushes you a little bit as a reader is interesting, I think. You know, I like to think of reading in terms of diet. We all know if we have a nice varied diet, it'll make us more healthier. Well, I think you should approach reading in the same way. If you're just reading everything from one genre, it's not, you know, that's the equivalent of not having a very mixed diet. So read some of these really great authors, but don't just plow through them. You know, read like a writer. Actually say to yourself as you're reading, you know, how did they do that? You find a passage that makes you feel engaged or some element of a work that really sparks your imagination. And ask yourself, how did they do that? Was it something in the style? Was it something actually in the content or the structure of the story? Was it a vocabulary choice? You know, who knows? Was it the punctuation? It could be anything. Really, really, you need sort of a forensic level of detail. This is kind of slightly different to the reading for enjoyment and relaxation that a lot of you probably do. Also, while you're at it, really look for passages that don't work for you. You know, what don't you like about them? Again, is it the content, the style? Is it the theme? Is it something else? What's kind of annoying you about it? What do you think? I could have done that better. You know, so, you know, what's the writer doing to draw you in? Does the story make you think? Does it fire up your emotions? And try and store these gems away. One good thing, and I'm kind of running the sections into a little bit together today because it's kind of a live experience, all the kind of in one long rambling take. I hope it's not too rambling. And this is kind of the writer's toolbox thing here for you to think about. So one good way to store up these emotions is to keep what I'll call a response journal. And it will kind of guide your reading, your recording of your responses to your reading, I should say, more accurately. So when you're reading as a writer, and this might have to be a separate time to that, you know, reading you do just before you go to sleep, because you need to be sort of wide awake to do this kind of thing. You have your notebook, or it could be a, you know, an online type note, or, you know, you could be using Evernote, anything, whatever you want. But here's the headings to think about, and they're very simple. And it's likes, dislikes, puzzles, and patterns. Now, I didn't invent these. I think I got them from a guy called Aidan Chambers, and this is going back to my teaching experience, but it does hold true, and I find this works for me as a writer and as an adult. So, you know, bear with me if that sounds a bit oversimplified. I'll run through them. So likes and dislikes, I've kind of covered already. You know, what is effective, what works. Try and be forensic in your analysis of what it is that is actually really making that passage sing to you, or, you know, giving you the shivers and think, oh, that's wrong. That's, you know, I hate the way they've done that. And it's really worthwhile jotting down something there. Puzzles is anything that fires up a question in your mind when you're reading. You know, why does a character behave in a certain way? Why do they do a certain thing? Or it could be a style issue. So it could be you're thinking, wow, the writer's changed the point of view there. Why did they do that? Has that worked? Perhaps they've used some other specific plot device that you want to think, "What? Hang on, what's going on there?" You know, sometimes really great writers kind of push us a bit to the point that a piece of text can be almost unsettling or disturbing. And great things to, for your analysis to try and put down. It's not that you liked it or didn't like it, but it kind of, it really woke you up and thought, oh, what's going on there? So that's puzzles. So we've got likes, dislikes, puzzles, and the last one is patterns, or you could call that themes. So here you're looking for any themes that might arise from the story. Are they easy to see? Are they implied type themes? Are they sort of quite shallow, or are they very deep themes, you know, sort of deep underlying themes? Do they help you engage with the story? And that's a really good place to note down any similarities you see, perhaps between characters. For example, a couple of characters might seem like really different kinds of people, but perhaps they're both lonely, or, you know, perhaps they both feel trapped, or they have regrets, or perhaps they're both happy about a new start in life. You know, so that would be something to look for in terms of patterns in what you're reading. So it's quite simple, really, but it. The heading sounds simple, but what you put into it is quite deep. So what you get out of it has real value for you. So it's likes, dislikes, puzzles, and patterns. And you jot those down in some form of response journal. And after a while, you know, it's the kind of thing you can internalize. So you'll be reading something and you'll be kind of, oh, yeah, that's a like, that's a dislike, that's a puzzle. And, you know, you start to do it without having to write it down. But the nice thing about having it written down is it's something to go back to. Okay, I don't really have a listener feedback thing for you at the moment. I'm finding it hard to get people to actually go and visit the site and leave something there. So, you know, perhaps that's something that I'll have to discontinue, regrettably, for the moment, until we actually get a few people around. But I think that as I've kind of raced through that, I'm more or less out of stuff to say. I would love to hear from you. So, you know, perhaps you will get a mention in next week's show if you go to the site at writingtalkpodcast.com, where you'll find all the links and things. And you can leave a comment on, this is episode 19. You know, have you been in an online course and found it fantastic? Would you like to recommend somebody? A bit wary about doing that after what I've said, you know, in case you've got any... no affiliate links there, please. But no, seriously, if you've as a customer, you've come across something that's worked or not worked, in general terms, that would be nice to mention, but I'm not particularly into sort of blaming people and naming names here. I don't really want to get into that. If you're dissatisfied with some course provider, take it up with them. It's no good airing grievances elsewhere. Take it up with them and see what they say. Because who knows, they might give you money back. They often promise that they will. So I will kind of stop there before I get myself into trouble, I think. Thank you very much for listening. I hope me doing this sort of live as a run-through is okay and works out with the sound quality and stuff. And I'll say goodbye. So I'll kind of... And in the meantime, keep writing, keep tapping away, keep scribbling. Thank you and goodbye.